Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off. Starts Friday and open Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside.
Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, this is Justin Richmond, host of the Broken Record Podcast. Join me along with co-host Leah Rose as we sit down with the artists you love to get unparalleled creative insight. You'll hear revealing interviews with some of the most legendary figures in music like Paul Simon, Usher, Pete Townsend, Damon Albarn of the Gorillaz, and Missy Elliott. And you'll hear from up-and-comers like jazz artist Leve, who told me about her fast rise to fame during the pandemic. Listen to Broken Record on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So you guys heard from me yesterday about my thoughts on the raid against President Trump, this weaponization against President Trump, this weaponization against all of us, right? Because whether you hate Trump or you love him, it's just like how we stood with Brett Kavanaugh. Whether you thought he was the best candidate or not for the Supreme Court, you could not let them win. So whether you want President Trump to be the nominee for 2024 or not, that's besides the point. We have to stand with President Trump now against this weaponization of government. We have to stand with him against the Biden regime from becoming a banana republic, from becoming a third world country, because the Biden regime is an authoritarian regime. For the first time ever, they have targeted a former president. They have sent the FBI to his personal house. This cannot stand in America, and the time to stand up is now. The time to speak out is now, before it's too late, before we lose the opportunity to do so. So with that, I'm going to bring in Stephen Miller, the former senior advisor to President Trump and president of America First Legal. It's a conservative nonprofit committed to upholding America First principles and also fighting the left's radical and lawless agenda, which we are seeing unfold in America today. So with that, here's Stephen Miller. So Stephen Miller, I think we were all watching last night and reading the news in disbelief. What has America become?
Well, we're now basically a third world country. We just have a little bit more money and we have a much larger national debt. But in terms of the state of our law enforcement system in this country, we very much resemble a third world country, because what do we have? We have bloodshed and violence and gangs marauding in our streets unimpeded by law enforcement, right? DOJ isn't running around the country dismantling violent street gangs and organized crime that have whole communities held hostage and in terror. But at the same time, what we do have is a Department of Justice that has now been fully weaponized as an instrument to target, harass, bully, and their goal, destroy their political enemies and the enemies of the Democrat Party. And so this raid on the private residence of President Donald Trump is the most shocking and most galling, abhorrent escalation that we could possibly imagine in that campaign. This has been building, of course, for some time. We've all watched it. We don't have enough time here or anywhere really outside of probably a good-sized, lengthy book to go over the full catalog of abuses, the long train of horrors. But just to remind people in brief, we remember the phony dossier. We remember the completely fabricated, wholly constructed narrative about Russian collusion. We remember people being thrown in prison on the pretext of that narrative. We remember, for example, how they took out the president's first national, Mike Flynn, who had been a critic of the deep state and the security state. He was framed, and he was financially ruined, and ultimately, although he hasn't said this to me, I'm just divining here based on what I think we all have divined, which is that faced with complete and total destruction by DOJ, ultimately then felt that he was forced to plead guilty to, of course, the crime he most assuredly didn't commit. We remember that. We remember Carter Page. We remember George Papadopoulos. Paul Manafort, another great example. This one I think I talked about enough in my view, but he has a book out now. I haven't read it. I presume people can read it and learn a lot more. But in very short form, Paul Manafort, who so again, this shows you how far back this has been going. When President Trump was flying high on the polls in 2016, what do? They take out his then campaign chairman, Paul Manafort. And that was based on this notion that he had been illicitly helping Ukraine. This was, I guess, before the best thing you could possibly do in the eyes of the media was to help Ukraine. But he was advising the then president of Ukraine. And then later on, they jailed Paul Manafort for simplifying here, but basically for not properly registering as a foreign agent and for not properly paying taxes on his overseas incomes. Now, he asserts his complete and total innocence on both of those points. But what's even more fundamental and important than that is that tax laws are extraordinarily complex, particularly when you're dealing with overseas consulting contracts, as are the laws governing who is a foreign consultant and advisor versus who is a foreign lobbyist. If we jailed every single person in Washington, D.C., who provided advice to a foreign government and in their minds to advance the interests of the United States, we would have to put tens of thousands of people in prison. The way that these laws are written, you can put anybody in jail if you want to. I'm going to stop there with a list of FBI abuses and DOJ abuses because it'll take up the whole show. But my point is that you have this long runway of police state authoritarian tactics to jail anyone and everyone associated with Donald Trump and to plant false narratives in the media consistently using deep state intelligence methods, the kind of disinformation campaigns that have been perfected in overseas contexts are now being weaponized against our own citizenry. So this is the apex of all of that. In sum here, the use of the FBI 90 days from a midterm election, when President Biden is the lowest polling president in history, we're in a recession, we have more domestic crises happening and foreign policy crises happening simultaneously than ever before in American history, to in that moment, and if we're to believe media reports, based upon the notion that the National Archives has a different view of what should be archived than the person who has sole authority to so determine, the president, to conduct a raid on that basis. I mean, this is North Korean level thuggery. It really is. That's all I can say.
And Stephen, get into that, because that's allegedly, well, first of all, if anyone wants to know if this wasn't political or that this was politically motivated, I mean, obvious, everyone listening to the show knows it was politically motivated. But then the FBI took that information of the raid, leaked the details of the raid to The New York Times, which is where you go, you know, when you're a liberal. But, you know, talk about the classification process a little bit further. The allegation here is that, you know, essentially you should have turned this some information over to the National Archives and shouldn't be in possession of potentially classified information. But get into the fact that the president ultimately has the authority on what's classified and not. Talk a little bit more about that for the audience.
Yeah. And so, you know, I want to stipulate everything I'm saying here, of course, is just based on both my my reading of and sort of sifting through what I see publicly reported in the news, and you always have to, of course, you try to have to read in between the lines and then in between those lines and even deeper to try and get sort of what was really being driven at, as well as just my understanding of how, having worked, of course, in the White House for 4 years, how presidencies as a general matter work and how the laws governing classifications is a very general matter work. And so with all that being said, the classification authority is the president's and the president's alone. And anybody else who classifies or declassifies in the government is doing so on the delegated authority of the president, right? So in other words, imagine a world in which some functionary at the National Archives said, I think this should be classified. And the president said, any president at all said, I don't think it should be classified. It's not a debate. There's not a contest. There's no tension there. The president wins 100% of the time, every time, because it is the president's duty to decide which of our nation's secrets should meet that standard and which shouldn't. And we know, of course, over time, the deep state has grossly abused the classification authority for all manner of reasons, again, more than we have time to get into here. And then at other times, they've leaked information that is properly classified in order to hurt a political opponent, and we saw that consistently. We also saw, for example, how many of the president's phone conversations or transcripts of calls with foreign leaders were leaked in some form or another, you know, which really does, in a very severe way, jeopardize our national security. But the point of this is to say that it is on its face preposterous to suggest, just in any context with any president, that if, because remember, Hillary Clinton wasn't the president when she asked to wash 33,000 emails and conducted all of her business as Secretary of State on a server. So so any attempt, even as a legal matter, in a general sense, to say that, well, classification laws would apply in the same manner is hogwash. The president has that authority. It's his alone. That's how the government functions. He can decide who gets a security clearance, who doesn't get a security clearance, and so on and so forth. To have any other view of it, right, is to in effect say that a permanent bureaucracy, not our elected leader, controls our nation's information. That would be in full-throated embrace of authoritarianism. Now, since I mentioned the Hillary thing, I want to make another point on this, which is that just to show you the no one in history has ever done what Hillary Clinton did. In other words, while sitting Secretary of State, to create a homebrew, illegal, private email server to conduct all state business, thereby depriving the National Archives of all relevant historical information and otherwise, and then to erase all those records at the same time as millions, tens of millions of dollars are flooding into the Clinton Foundation from the very people that Hillary is meeting with. In other words, what is almost certainly contained within those emails is evidence of the greatest pay-for-play scheme in human history. So in other words, while Paul Manafort was being sentenced in effect to a life prison to die in jail because he provided advice to a leader of Ukraine, Hillary Clinton, and this has been documented by Peter Schweitzer and others, is engaged in a pay-for-play scheme and, with consciousness of guilt, is conducting that business on an illegal server and then acid-washing it and destroying it, smashing phones with hammers. You remember all this. Smashing devices, destroying all the records. I mean, if you put this in the plot of a movie like Donnie Brasco, people would say this is incredible because the mafia would never go to such extraordinary lengths. I mean, it's a cover-up so brazen as to defy human imagination. That, by contrast, what you're talking about here, again, just based on news reports, is literally an archivist at the National Archives saying, I know better than the President of the United States what does or doesn't qualify as classified information, which is an unconstitutional view of things, it's an illegal view of things, it's an insane view of things, and of course, if you ever wanted to have that conversation could be had in a very polite and respectful fashion, completely outside the bounds of anything even within the universe of law enforcement. So it's my own personal view, I think that you would agree, that this is a completely pretextual basis for a raid to try to ransack through the president's personal information as part of a deep state war on President Trump. And I think any other interpretation of it, anyone who thinks that this is just it's a sincere effort by the FBI to try to look into the intricacies of the archiving process, if you believe that, I mean, you're basically, you have a non-functioning brain.
No, I totally agree. And then you look at the fact that the FBI gave immunity to Hillary Clinton staffers and then stuck it to Michael Flynn, as you pointed out, or the fact that James Comey had exonerated her before even interviewing her, just the complete double standard, because clearly the FBI had a mission. It was to take down President Trump. But you talk about the deep state and the administrative state. I mean, aren't we at a place now as a country where the administrative state, the permanent bureaucracy, has more power than even the president of the United States?
Well, what I would say is that the deep state has amassed more authority over the daily functions of government than the elected branches of government. That is a true statement. But when you combine that with the power of corporations that ally with the deep state, like, so take, for example, a company like Google, when you combine that then with the power of corporate media to decide what information Americans do or don't have access to, which is then multiplied in this little triumvirate with corporate technology power. So in other words, a company like Facebook can then say, well, we're going to only promote these or those stories that are coming from the New York Times, the Washington Post, whatever. We'll label other things as disinformation. The power collectively between the deep state, the big business allies of the deep state, and then and the media, then now you're talking about orders of magnitude greater power than the elected branches of government. But, and this is the key, is that in 2025, if you had a situation in which you elected the right House majority, the right Senate majority, you had the American people at your back, and you had President Trump back in the White House, I 100% believe that, without getting into any detail, that we absolutely can, we absolutely would, and we would indeed have to, ultimately defeat that unholy triumvirate, and we would be successful in so doing.
But see, I think there's a lot of people listening to that, you know, because I think a lot of people are discouraged and demoralized right now in the state of the country, and they'll say, okay, I go out and I work for these people, but why didn't they get it done the last time?
Well, the important thing to understand is that if you go back in time to, if you're doing a podcast in 2014 or 2015, I mean, who's even having a conversation about the deep state? As you know, that was a very niche academic interest only but a few years ago. People wrote papers on it, mostly in the context of understanding a lot of our moronic foreign policies. And it was something that was given very little, if any, attention at all by conservatives as a whole, by Republicans as a whole. The deep state came out of the shadows to try to stop President Trump at every single turn. And that's one of the reasons why in 2017, the majorities in Congress then, particularly led by Paul Ryan, were ill-equipped to deal with it. Because if you had been a Republican who'd spent 30 years in Washington, and that was the, like, you know, the last of like your 2 years in Washington, this is not something you'd thought about a single solitary day in your entire life. The Republican Party of today, as led by Donald Trump, and with the new lawmakers that we are in the process of electing, and you see some of these people all you know, say as an example, like a J.D. Vance in Ohio. We are creating in real time a new Republican Party that will indeed be equipped. And you need to have Congress. You need to have Congress ally with you to achieve this mission. Because a lot of this also has to do with being in a position to use the funding mechanism to be able to bring to bring some of these recalcitrant agencies to heel. HEEL is an H-E-E-L. But those stars are aligning now if we do the hard work now of first beginning to get those members elected in 2023 and then recruiting a whole second wave to come in 2025, in particular on the Senate side, which has been lagging far behind and where we're going to have a lot of opportunities. But I understand people's pessimism. If you've heard anything that I've said at this point in time, but Donald Trump is the person who is the only one that has the force of will, the force of personality, the sheer unbending determination to see this mission through. And I would frankly say that the best revenge, the best justice against the FBI's political persecution of President Trump is to get him back into the White House in 2025.
Quick commercial break. Back with Stephen Miller on the other side.
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
Every week, we'll pick a new song from the list and talk about their placement on the revamped 2021 list.
We'll also have guests join us, ranging from the artists themselves to the producers, or simply other writers like ourselves who voted on them.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern-day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside and Britney Spears' Baby One More Time.
There's so many fascinating stories that have been forgotten, like Midnight Train to Georgia starting with a phone call to Farrah Fawcett, or how the Yeah Yeah Yeahs inspired Kelly Clarkson's banger Since You've Been Gone and Beyoncé's Hold Up. Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
More Than a Movie is back with season two of the award-winning film podcast, and this time with a lot more movies. I'm your host, Alex Fumero, and each week I'm going to talk to the people behind some of my favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the OG spy kid, Alexa Penavega.
You had Carlo Gugino, who's the coolest mom ever. You had Antonio, who's handsome, amazing, charismatic. And then Carmen and Juni. I felt like a lot of other kids felt like this could be me.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Every episode will feature interviews with the biggest actors, directors, writers, and producers behind your favorite films and tap into the history of Latinos in film. Listen to More Than a Movie as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, this is Justin Richmond, host of the Broken Record Podcast. Join me and co-host Leah Rose for in-depth creative conversations with the artists you love. Over the past 5 years, we've interviewed some of the most legendary figures in music, like Paul Simon, Pharrell, Damon Albarn, Andre 3000, and Usher. And you'll hear from rock icons like Pete Townsend, who shares wild stories about his formative years with The Who, and Johnny Marr, the legendary guitarist and co-founder of The Smiths, who has an unwavering devotion to his craft. Or the stories behind the legendary hits Babyface wrote for Whitney Houston and Madonna, plus how he collaborates with the new generation of R&B stars like Kehlani and Doechii. Listen to Broken Record on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get ready for Smart Money Happy Hour. Pull up a chair. It's the happy hour you wish your friends were having.
Mix two money experts with some hot takes and a splash of nostalgia, and you get me, George Campbell.
And me, Rachel Cruze, talking unfiltered about what's going on in the world, pop culture, and how to afford a life you love.
We're talking money, celebrity budgets, and my budget for my two French bulldogs. It's a lot.
You'll hear it all on Smart Money Happy Hour. Listen on the iHeart app or wherever you get your podcasts.
How much dismantling could a Republican-led Congress and a Republican president do of the federal government? Because I think every American now realizes that this massive centralized government is the biggest threat to America that we are facing. So how much can they dismantle it?
They could do an enormous deal. I mean, if you take, for example, like the FBI, I mean, you could completely restructure the entire organization. Just using the appropriations process alone, and you could basically empower all the people who need to be empowered and disempower all the people who need to be disempowered. This would apply, of course, to any federal agency, CDC, FDA, you know, with respect to all of the COVID tyranny, and certainly true in the context of the State Department, which has an enormous deep state. But that would be combined with then the President of the United States then using his constitutional authority as well to reshape the bureaucracy. And I think there's a lot more authority than people realize that the President has, notwithstanding some of the civil service laws that have been passed that I would argue in many cases are themselves unconstitutional. I think a lot of that will have to be litigated in court. But and then you're building a team, right? So, for example, I run a nonprofit, America First Legal, that does an enormous amount of litigation against the radical left and the Biden administration and the woke corporations, woke schools, et cetera. But so in the process of doing that, right, we're creating a team of incredibly talented attorneys who would be in a position to serve in a new administration, be in a position to be general counsels, or agency attorneys, and to be able to ensure that the bureaucracy is reformed in a very fundamental way. One thing I want to say, though, just because we were talking earlier, so don't get misunderstood, is that with respect to all these stories about classify this and classify that, I think just going back an even greater step, it's important to note that the deep state lies, what they feed to the reporters are lies. Your default assumption should be everything you're reading is trying to push you in some way. What we are witnessing is an attempt to frame, as has always been the case, the president. An attempt to frame what is surely one of the most innocent men to ever serve in public office, because they've been trying to get something on him, DOJ and attorneys generals in New York and Georgia, everywhere, for years and years and years. And so before we even get to, because I was making a point that everyone needs to understand how classification works, but none of that should be understood as ceding any of the points in these stories. I can assure you that anything that President Trump's staff, what have you, because it's not like a president's personally involved in packing up boxes. I mean, that is just, you have to know nothing about government to think that, you know, presidents, when they're leaving, sit down and start going through filing cabinets. But I can assure you that whatever process was done by staff and attorneys in that case was completely and totally rigorously compliant with whatever the rules are and has been since then. And I'm sure, as the statement alluded to, he's gone above and beyond to try to appease these archivists who've been pushing these various claims. My point, which I think, just to go back to, just have it clear for everybody, is that even if you were to indulge the various fantasies being pushed in these stories, they're predicated on a theory of the law that is on its face wrong and indeed unconstitutional. It would be impermissible to have a view of the presidency in which his view of where whether a record is marked a certain way is subordinate to the view of the bureaucracy. That would be a constitutionally impermissible view. So I just want to make sure that we're very clear on that.
Well, I think you hit the point earlier when you were talking about, I mean, this is the most investigated man maybe in American history, and the most they can come up with is a dispute with the National Archives over some documents. But I wanted to ask you, what about abolishing the FBI?
So I would, my answer to that is that the there's a lot of great reform ideas out there, whether it's replace it with a new institution, whether it's reorganize it from the ground up. I think the answer is that people need to do their homework over the next 2 years, sort of like a long transition, if you will, not sort of 3 months of a normal presidential transition, and really figure out what is going to be the best way to accomplish the mission as quickly and as urgently as possible. As I sit here with you today, I don't have that answer. I have ideas of what ought to be done. But what I can say as a general matter is that the end result is quite clear and unambiguous, which is that the FBI needs to get the hell out of politics, and more specifically, the hell out of playing the role of deciding in their mind who does or doesn't get to be president. And they need to get back to the business, whether you call them the FBI or you rename them or whatever you do, they need to get back to the business of dismantling organized crime in America. You know, we once had in this country a massive sprawling network of organized criminals that were known then as the mafia. And the FBI, realizing that local law enforcement couldn't handle this alone, it was too large, it was too powerful, set about the decades-long task of dismantling it to the point now where I think it'd be safe to say that that Italian organized crime is not a major driving factor in American life at this point in time because of the FBI's hard work. But there are now all different kinds and manner of transnational criminal organizations operating in this country, and then they're feeding drugs and weapons into street gangs that are operating in almost every city in America. And that should be the business of federal law enforcement, to dismantle these international networks that are killing our children, that are poisoning our cities, that are making our neighborhoods unsafe, that are causing people to live in the grip of terror. That's what they should be doing. And that needs to be the ultimate end goal of any reform effort.
No, I agree with that. What legal options does President Trump have in front of him to fight back as they target him here?
Well, although I run a legal organization, I myself am not an attorney, which is part of the reason why I think that I'm exactly the person who should be leading a legal organization, because you need to have that 30,000 foot view above the legal details of strategically where we're trying to go and what we're trying to do and how we're going to get there. So there would be others who would be better answering that question than me in terms of what kinds of suits and motions and legal tactics could be deployed. But what I would say, which is a bit more in my realm, is that our task right now is to elect the largest number of real conservative fighters that we possibly can in November. Real, serious conservative fighters who are going to go in and who are going to use the subpoena powers and the investigatory powers of Congress to expose every single fact that needs to be exposed and to issue criminal referrals and contempt referrals everywhere they must, and to pursue impeachments anywhere the facts lead, so that we can restore what is the centerpiece of the whole American experiment, which is the impartial rule of law, the idea that the law is blind. And that's something that we've lost, and if we don't get it back, the American experiment itself won't survive.
I agree with that. Stephen Miller, is there anything else you'd like to leave us with before we go?
No, I would just say that the one thing that I still think I alluded to earlier that needs to be investigated, and I alluded to it, is what was the Clinton Foundation doing when she was Secretary of State? Remember, we talk a lot about the emails, but I want to really hammer this home. We don't talk about the reason for the cover-up. She didn't delete 33,000 emails for fun. She didn't create a homebrew server because she thought it would have better wireless connectivity.
There is a forethought, a consciousness of guilt, a desire to cover up something of such magnitude, such intensity, such sprawling reach, that she went to this profound length. That aspect of it, in other words, digging into the records of the Clinton Foundation, its associates, its networks, and everyone connected to it, that work still hasn't been done. All we've ever been told is that Comey wasn't going to prosecute over the mishandling of classified information by Secretary of State on a homebrew server. The underlying scandal, the thing that was covered up, still has not been meaningfully probed, let alone given the full weight of the government into an investigation. So that still needs to be done. And so we can't lose sight of the fact that that there's still a unfinished investigation in American history. Not to mention, which we didn't even get into today, of course, the Hunter Biden probe and the Biden family corruption scandal. So both of those need to be addressed with force come January.
100% agree. Stephen Miller, thanks for joining the show. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Miller for joining the show, and thank you for you at home listening every Monday, every Thursday, The Truth with Lisa Booth. Please go to Apple, leave us a review, give us 5 stars, let us know what you think of the show. And I want to thank my executive producer, John DeCascio, for putting it all together. Until next time.
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off starts Friday and opens Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside.
Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, this is Justin Richmond, host of the Broken Record Podcast. Join me, along with co-host Leah Rose, as we sit down with the artists you love to get unparalleled creative insight. You'll hear revealing interviews with some of the most legendary figures in music, like Paul Simon, Usher, Pete Townsend, Damon Albarn of the Gorillaz, and Missy Elliott. And you'll hear from up-and-comers, like jazz artist Leve, who told me about her fast rise to fame during the pandemic. Listen to Broken Record on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.